It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A quick heads up on our programming plans. Join us tonight at 8 for live NPR coverage of the Democratic National Convention from Milwaukee. We bring you up to speed with a recap, and it's a convention wrap-up tonight starting at 8 here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, with millions of Americans out of work and college and grade schools going virtual, retail sales are expected to take a hit. But Target, meanwhile, posted record-breaking sales growth this week for its second quarter. Have you done any back-to-school shopping yet? Are you holding off on shopping for school supplies because you don't know what will be necessary in the virtual setup? Join in at 800-642-1234. Christine Whelan is a consumer science professor at the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. Christine, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, so many school districts are doing a mix of in-person, virtual, some all virtual. And, you know, families are wondering what really needs to be purchased for back-to-school supplies. What are you seeing out there?
Well, the families that I'm talking to are all saying the same thing. I don't know. I don't know what to do. And so what that's showing is a delay in consumer spending when it comes to those back to school essentials. But when the National Retail Federation did a survey asking people how much they anticipated spending on back to school this year, turns out that people are thinking they're going to be spending a fair amount more this year than before, in part because if they have to set up a school in their own home, that means laptops, electronics, things like flash drives, even desks and paper and pencil for the home rather than simply getting school supplies for school.
Oh, and so, you know, many people and their families are trying to develop their little home offices, home school setups, and that can mean a lot of other different costs, like you mentioned, desks and certain other supplies, even electronics.
Yeah. So when we tend to think about back to school shopping, we usually think about clothing, apparel, and we think about some books and pencils. And usually folks will buy things like Kleenex for the classroom. Now we're seeing
lots of Kleenex.
Yeah.
And Ziploc baggies.
Oh, we are all so familiar, but now it's not just Kleenex. Now it is the incredibly valuable and hard to find wipes and the masks and sanitizers and all sorts of other things that might have to come back for the classroom. So that's if you go. But then if you're staying at home, you know, a child needs a desk chair. They need, they need a little desk or a place to work. They may need headphones so that the whole family does not hear their Zoom meeting. There are all of these extra expenses that are not usually on a back to school shopping list that a lot of people are having to factor into their financial budgets now.
Christine, how big is the back to school shopping season for retailers?
So when we include back to school and back to college spending, we're looking at more than $100 billion in spending in retail. And that is just a huge chunk of change. So this is a very big market. And I think that retailers are thinking that it's going to be a little bit differently timed this year, but that a lot of spending is going to have to be done.
And for people who are shopping for computers or desks, I'm wondering, have you seen an uptick in the online sector for these big retailers like Target?
Absolutely. So more people are shopping online. And while kids usually love to go back to school shopping with parents, there are fewer families who are doing that. Instead, they're shopping online. And also we're seeing an uptick in demand that sometimes surpasses the supply for items like electronics and desks and things like that. So while we all want to delay until we know exactly what we have to buy, there's a little bit of pressure and panic that those things might also disappear off the shelves and off the online retail establishments if we don't get them soon enough.
Well, and it's interesting you say how, you know, children are usually quite involved in that back to school shopping checklist. And I know mine always had geared up. And I'm wondering, you know, this year when they're not doing it actively in stores and they're not really participating in that way. I noticed that there are fewer items that are landing into the cart. It's just the essentials and nothing else, because, you know, the kids aren't there to throw their things in there that they want on whims. You know, that too could probably have an impact.
It certainly does. The thing that balances that impact out, good from a retailing perspective and tough for the family checkbook, is that a lot of these items like electronics are bigger ticket items. So throwing in an extra pack of colored pencils that the child wants, that's an easier extra add than having to think about, you know, $800 for a new computer or a fancy camera or flash drive.
We're talking with Christine Whelan, who is a professor of consumer science at UW-Madison. We're looking at back-to-school shopping season amid the pandemic. Taking your insights, your questions, have you done back-to-school shopping yet? What does it look like? How do you plan to get school supplies this year? Is it in person or online? What have you noticed about back-to-school sections? How are retailers promoting their products? And there are new supplies out there, like masks. Join in at 800-642-1234. Christine, I'm wondering too, are retailers taking a different tact on their approach to back to school? My, you know, first blush is that their back to school marketing campaigns were done perhaps even before COVID was really a major hit on the US.
Yeah. So there's this interesting thing that's going on in terms of the marketing right now, you know, marketing of retailers, but also the sort of school messaging. People who are trying to get the kids back into the classrooms are trying to be really upbeat and saying that, you know, this is going to work. We're going to have all these good safety measures. While parents are saying, oh, heavens, I don't know. This may not work for very long. Why should I spend all this money on something that we won't need? And from the parents that I'm talking to, and certainly from my own perspective, I have a 5, 7, and 9-year-old, so I'm right in the same boat here, is that, you know, I worry that I'm going to be spending on a lot of school supplies, a lot of safety supplies that I might not actually use. And so there's also a fear of spending on unnecessary stuff or wasted spending because the world keeps changing underneath us.
And that too could also delay, you know, making those purchases. I'm wondering, what about the clothing sector when kids are often trying on those jeans, trying on those new tennis shoes? How do you do that when everything seems to go online?
So a lot of retailers are offering free returns and exchanges, which really helps, because what we're seeing, amazingly enough, is that there hasn't been the huge drop-off in the apparel sector for back to school that you might anticipate. You know, kids still need new clothes because unlike adults, well, some of us adults grew in the pandemic as well, but kids grow year on year, right? And so the jeans that they wore last fall, they're going to probably need new ones as they grow bigger and taller. So, you know, there is an increase still in those apparel shopping items at this time of year. But yes, in terms of online, we are certainly seeing more online spending. And again, you know, we're also seeing that real increase in safety supplies. And those things are kind of the less fun things and the kids aren't really as involved in buying those. But, you know, the parents are trying to find masks that the kids will think are cool enough and nice enough that fashionable enough that they'll wear.
My kids are in your kids' area in age range, too. And I know that in our house for clothes, we kind of gave them each a little bit of an allowance to go online and to do some clothes shopping. But I also found it was like delayed gratification, because every day they were looking at the mailbox to see like when the items that they purchased, when they're actually get here. And some of them weren't from Amazon, so it wasn't like, you know, next day. So I'm also noticing that they're having to kind of temper their anticipation and realize that the world isn't so instantaneous.
Yeah, this is a lesson for a lot of kids, well, really all kids and all of us, in uncertainty and in not getting instant gratification. and in trying to find the positives in the moment while knowing that the future, you know, who knows what's going to happen. You know, I guess from a meta and psychological perspective, you can say that, you know, you could learn good lessons that will instill for years to come. But honestly, for most families, it's really kind of crazy making, right? Because we want to go back to school, go back to work. We want to make our plans. Whether or not those plans are actually firm, even in a normal year, you know, that's a larger question. But this year, it seems particularly uncertain. And at least for my kids, that's causing a fair amount of anxiety about going back to school.
Yeah. I mean, I offered my daughter to come to Target and she said, oh, no, Mom, I won't. I can't. I don't want exposure. And I just realized that, oh, my goodness, there's more anxiety there than I realized.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the kids I'm talking to have this pressure that they're hearing, gosh, school is going to expose kids and then kids are going to expose parents. Mm-hmm. And so one of my daughters said to me, well, Mommy, I don't want to get the virus at school and bring it home and hurt you. And so this is also putting lots of pressure on kids. So what is usually a discussion of, no, I want the pink binder or I want the green binder, you know, now we're talking about viral exposure and, you know, and who's going to be responsible when the family gets sick. I mean, these are very big and weighty topics.
We're talking about back to school shopping season, what that looks like, what families are talking about amid the pandemic, how they're navigating these back to school times. We have UW-Madison Consumer Science Professor Christine Whelan as our guide. How do you plan to get school supplies this year? Is it in person? Is it online? What are those conversations like at home? Are you a teacher? What are you doing for supplies this year? Do you know families who depend on donated school supplies? Has it been more difficult to get supplies donated and distributed amid the pandemic to the families who need it? Join in at any point in the discussion. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Christine Whelan right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Christine Whelan. She's a consumer science professor at UW-Madison. August retail sales are likely to drop despite the best efforts of retailers to market their back-to-school shopping season. Some stores are trying to get ahead of it by pushing stylish masks and homeschooling supplies, products to help turn your home into a school. Target's tagline is, "Find everything you need for wherever you college." Christine Whelan is following this. She stays with us for 10 more minutes. Christine, what do you see happening in the college student back to school spending? What does this sector look like?
So this sector is even more challenging than the K through 12 schools, right? Because these are kids who usually not only buy things like books and pencils, but these are kids who buy microwaves and set up as a second home when they go to college. Many of them are staying at home. Many schools are not opening for in-person classes. And for those who are, the feeling is that it might not last for very long. So there is, so when we look at the back-to-school sector as a whole, and again, not just in terms of sort of the office supplies, but in terms of all of the spending around kids leaving the house and setting up on their own, that is something that we really may see a drop in. So there are, that is a place to watch as things become more clear about what more colleges are going to do.
I noticed Bed Bath & Beyond released like a slick guidebook to make your room and your kitchen more dorm-like at home. And I was like, wait a minute, I thought dorms were the uncool thing. It just seems so absurd.
It does. And, you know, the thing is, of course, retailers are trying to move their product and actually solve problems for people, because this is a source of stress and concern. And it's a source of stress and concern in terms of buying the right thing if you have the money to do so. It's a source of incredible stress and concern if you don't have the resources to buy all these things. And one of the things that we see every year is families donating back to school supplies and donating back to school boxes to families who can't otherwise afford them. There are usually set up at retailers so that you can do that right on the spot. This year, we need to make sure that those families who usually get help will get similar help to make sure that they get the absolute basics that they need for school supplies as well.
I'm sure that some of that distribution channel is going to be much more limited as, you know, contact is diminished. Getting those backpacks full of supplies to families who need them is going to be much more tricky, I would imagine.
Yeah, one of the really heartbreaking things to me about this pandemic is that that we're the haves versus the have-nots of education and access. And we're seeing that in back-to-school supplies. We're seeing that in Wi-Fi access. We'll certainly see that as the semester wears on in terms of the ability to have a safe place to focus and even get meals at school. So the more that those who have resources can do to make sure that they are reaching out, and if you're getting one for yourself, see if you can buy one for someone in need. Those are the small steps that that we can take to really try to make a difference in this very difficult time.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Christine Whelan, a professor of consumer science at UW-Madison School of Human Ecology, and we're talking about back-to-school season, the shopping time for retailers. Do you know students who depend on free school supplies during the school year? What are you hearing about back-to-school supply drives? Are you having a hard time finding school supplies online because things are sold out or backordered? Join in with your questions, your insights and experiences, 800-642-1234. Christine, we heard from Tom in Madison, called in, couldn't stay with us. Tom wanted to know if Wisconsin will have a tax-free holiday or a tax-free shopping weekend this year for school shopping.
Oh, that's a great question. Not that I have heard of, but it is a wonderful idea. And it certainly might get people into the stores more. So all of those kinds of pro-social ways of encouraging people to get out there, those are good retail ideas and good for the state.
You know, some parents might now be spending a whole lot more on childcare, wraparound care, because schools and after school programs are not operating. How does that affect what families can spend elsewhere in their budget?
It is a huge effect, because childcare is among the number one line items in a budget. And so if you are going to have to pay for childcare, pay for a learning pod if you're a family that can afford to do that, or even a tutor or a babysitter or any of these things, all of this costs a lot of money. And those expenses mean that there is less to spend on retail establishments. So when we look at spending on goods, you know, that's the kind of the books and the binders and the computers. But then they're spending on services, and that's the childcare and the and the learning pods. Services spending is going to go up, and that could have a positive impact on the economy as a whole, because we're then paying people to do other services. That puts money in their families' pockets, and the cycle continues. So, you know, But for an individual family looking at this, yes, childcare and more in-person educational expenses that the family might have to bear the burden of, that is going to be a huge expense over the next year, and one that is almost unpredictable, right? I mean, how do you hire, how do you get childcare and sign up for childcare when you don't know whether you're going to need it past October?
Yeah, because it is so day-to-day, month-to-month right now. Christine, I want to just circle away here for a moment from back to school shopping, because I know you've been writing a bit lately about COVID etiquette and about how to navigate these times when you may feel uncomfortable about attending a gathering. You had talked about wedding season. What insights can you give us there on etiquette around navigating these times with social distancing?
So COVID etiquette is a challenge because different people have different levels of risk tolerance and different attitudes toward the virus. And so you're kind of tiptoeing around. What if you are invited to a gathering of people who think it's fine to gather, as long as maybe they're outside or you can still get a big group together? That might make you feel uncomfortable. So the advice that I give is to have as much and as open of a conversation as you can. You can say what you feel comfortable with, what you don't feel comfortable with. When I've been having conversations with people, one of the things that I've been doing is saying, listen, with a smile, I've been saying, listen, I need to make my disclosures to you about my viral risk profile and what I'm comfortable with and what I'm not comfortable with. And that has turned into a way to have a good conversation. So the more open communication that we can have, the better. But within families, even within my own family, there is some tension about, you know, what's okay and what's not, who should be wearing a mask and when. So these are hard to navigate. And as much as open communication can happen, that's going to serve us well, especially as we head into the fall and winter.
Yeah, and certainly when you mention the tension in families and even maybe spouses who disagree as to whether a child should be schooled at home or schooled in in-person learning, and then you have to really figure out how do we find some common ground here in this pandemic.
It is. So household responsibilities and how the house is going to run has really been a pain point for a lot of families. I also direct the Money Relationships and Equality Initiative at UW-Madison. And we put together some free resources for families about how to talk about spending resources, not just money, but also time, and how we value the resources of time in the home. We're seeing many more women, especially many more mothers, having to move away from paid employment to educate their kids and to do more around the house during this time, and making sure that all of our contributions, both paid and unpaid, are really valued within the family unit. So these are very tricky topics, especially when we are all kind of on top of each other trying to be safer at home, and ones that I am hoping to create as a translational researcher. I'm hoping to create lots of free workbooks and guidebooks to help people navigate.
Christine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Good luck to everyone this fall.
You too. Christine Whelan, a professor of consumer science in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. Just ahead, we explore the 50th anniversary of the bombing of Sterling Hall on the UW-Madison campus with a historian and two people who were there. Do you remember the Sterling Hall bombing in August 1970? Share your experience, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.